Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Stanley Greenberg, a veteran pollster for Bill Clinton, Tony Blair, and Nelson Mandela, among other world leaders. He believes that the much sought-after center in American politics is a myth, and that the independent voter is an illusion. Given that the Obama administration's strategy seems to be to continually reach out to the center, this could spell trouble for them. Then we will speak with Dr. Kevin Casas-Zamora, who is the former vice president of Costa Rica and a senior fellow in foreign policy in Brookings Latin American Initiative. We will discuss the deteriorating health of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez and what is expected to be a furious power struggle to succeed him, given the lack of transparency about succession and the highly polarized political battle lines in Venezuela. Then finally, we'll speak with British documentarian Nick Broomfield, whose latest documentary feature, Sarah Palin, You Betcha, opens in theaters tomorrow. He and his co-director, Joan Churchill, have spent months in Wasilla, Alaska, talking to family, friends, and former friends and co-workers of the former beauty queen, who, in spite of her efforts to deny ugly charges about who she actually is, still might run for president. Joining us now is Stanley Greenberg, who was a pollster for President Bill Clinton and Vice President Al Gore, British Prime Minister Tony Blair, South African President Nelson Mandela, amongst other prominent world leaders. He is the co-founder with James Carville of Democracy Corps and the chairman and CEO of Greenberg Quinlan Rossiter Research. He was recently interviewed in New York Magazine in an article, The Elusive Indie. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stanley Greenberg.
I'm delighted to be here to talk about this very important subject.
And it is very important because it seems to be the centerpiece of President Obama's, not just his re-election strategy, but his political strategy. At least that's what we're told, is that he is trying to reach out to the independents in the center. It's often quoted that he is trying to be the adult in the room. So you're sort of exploding the myth that this very center exists.
God, I apologize. You know, the myth is much better and it's actually much more interesting if you can believe in the myth, that there's this generic independent voter that, out there who's, reasoned, sitting back, ready to vote for the most, adult-like, reasonable, bipartisan, leader, ready to cut entitlements. That's the kind of leader they're looking for. In fact, as, I indicated in the interview that was parallel the Frank Rich piece. This is a very diverse group of people. And there are, parts of it that are, anti-party and politics and looking, for that. But there are lots of other parts of other strands that run through the independent world that, make this a much more, unfortunately, complicated, answer.
Well, but what you say, Stanley Greenberg, is that contrary to the myth that the independents are more educated, ideologically moderate, studious, read up on the issues, come to consider judgments, you're saying in truth independent voters are less engaged and less informed.
This is true. They're usually get involved later in the process. And also some of this is even, just methodologically deceptive because because they get involved later. When you do a survey right now, it's shaped by, who does a survey at this time. And earlier in the process, the strong partisans, will do it. As you get later into the election and much closer to the election, the independents are more likely to participate. So it's very much, shaped by when you conduct, the survey.
So, Stanley Greenberg, is this notion of the virtue of the center and the virtue of the moderate, does this come out of a kind of, we have a convention in the press, unlike the European press and the rest of the world that is usually ideological and polarized, we have this notion of fairness and balance, which of course Fox News have somewhat abused. But the long and the short of it is, the idea that it's virtuous to be a centrist, that you give the pro, the con, and then a kind of meaningless mush. I mean, the truth of the matter is that convention in journalism didn't come about because of fairness. It came about because advertisers and media owners didn't want to offend anybody. So they just appealed to both sides.
Well, one of my big gripes is not, right at the center of this subject, but one of my great gripes is that there's a assumption that this is all reciprocal, that whatever's happening on the Republican side is also happening on the Democratic side. And so if you listen to the media, they will say, tis-tis. You know, the Republicans are, you know, refusing to compromise, and they're very, you know, very conservative and very, you know, polarized. And similarly, the Democrats very liberal and unwilling to compromise, and that this is a similar, you know, process on both sides, and the independents are growing and upset, disgusted with the whole thing. Now, the problem all is this is true on the Republican side. And I'm saying this, by the way, not in terms of characterizing their behavior. I'm talking about real data. You know, if you ask Republicans what's their ideology, heavily 75 to 80% of Republicans will describe themselves as conservatives. And that's grown, you know, over the course of the last decade. On the Democratic side, if you ask that same question, only one-third self-describe as liberals. Two-thirds of people who call themselves Democrats are either describe themselves as moderate or conservative. So the idea that the moderates are in the center, the fact is the Democrats are a very diverse coalition, you know, regionally diverse, demographically diverse, ideologically diverse, and much more divided than the trend we're talking about is mainly a Republican, you know, trend. And many of the views of moderate, you know, Democrats, you know, do share, you know, lap over, you know, into the independents.
Well, I think the bankruptcy, though, of this binary idea of equal arguments and equal time was most manifest during the threat to shut down the government over the debt ceiling extortion, in effect, it was. And one side was doing the extorting. However, the way it was presented in the press, exactly the way that you described it, was that it was just both sides were equally to blame. But it's also, I think, affected the debate on climate change, where, you know, phony oil company paid for so-called research is given equal weight to 99% of the world's climatologists. And creationism is equated with evolution. So I guess it's another discussion, but let's get...
I could not, you know, agree with you more. Now, there is, you know, look, some of this is the media and punditry, but some of it's also the obligation, you know, of leaders to, you know, to clarify the issues. The president... who I support and I'm doing everything possible for him to succeed, needs to be educative and has become much more educative in the last couple months as they turned to the jobs bill. But the president has to put the spotlight on the Tea Party and the House Republicans when you get to that, you know, the brink, you know, on the debt limit in order for the country to know what happened and what the stakes are. And that's, you know, and that's a question of the Democrats, not just nationally. You know, not just joining these issues, but also, you know, playing a much, being much more articulate about the stakes and who's responsible.
Again, I'm speaking with Stanley Greenberg, who is a pollster for President Bill Clinton and Vice President Al Gore, British Prime Minister Tony Blair, South African President Nelson Mandela, and many more world leaders. And we're talking about the elusive independence or the myth of the center, if you will. Now, does this mean that in this upcoming election year, for the president, who Axelrod recently acknowledged it would be a titanic struggle, and I think that, you know, there's been lots of discussion in the press, well, you know, Obama would be better off running against Perry than he would against candidate Mitt Romney. But the long and the short of it is that I guess, in a way, what he has to run against, he's got to run against somebody. And they've got the advantage now because they're having all these endless debates. Do you think until he has somebody to run against, he's kind of in flux?
There are things that one can do to be able to, you know, set the table for the choice you're going to, you know, to have. There's a big choice in the election. It's become, you know, apparent, you know, piece by piece here. I think it's gotten much clearer in the last month as the president has laid out his jobs bill and his long-term, you know, deficit plan. And as the Republican nominating process goes forward, as the public hears what they say, that impacts, you know, and the president has to pose a choice, and he's already doing it, and it's more and more he's doing it, and it's going to lead into a big choice about the future. And, you know, if you look at the Republican primary, I mean, right now Romney looks moderate, you know, on Social Security relative to Perry, who's talking about Social Security, the Ponzi scheme, but Romney's talking about Social Security privatization. So, the range of options here within the Republican primary process is privatization, you know, versus Ponzi scheme. And so that's not going to fly. And one of the, yeah, to be honest, one of the big swing voters, in this, in these last elections, have been seniors, you know, that are, you know, could be greatly impacted by the growing Republican determination to, you know, cut what they call entitlements. You know, so there, I mean, there are swing voters. They're, you know, heavily include seniors. It includes the more affluent suburbs. It includes, many white blue collar workers. They're very different, but, you know, and their swing have been very, you know, swing, from election to election. The president, they're, all of them for various reasons have been tough for the president, which is why he's not done well, with independents of late. You know, but, they, for various reasons, when they face a real choice, can begin to erode, you know, what the Republican position.
But why do you think that the president and a lot of Democrats are afraid of populism when it seems pretty clear on the record that the Republicans, in order to win, have to get Democratic votes, and they try to appeal to these blue collar white Democrats as populists. The Sarah Palin, I'm just, you know, I'm a regular working person. John Boehner, I wash the floor in my father's bar. They go out of their way to seem like ordinary folks and not shills for billionaires and millionaires. And I don't understand the fear of full-throated populism on the Democratic side.
Yeah, and nothing actually scares them more than when they come out with accusations about Democrats waging class warfare. That's, you know, that's exactly what they're fearful of. That Democrats will, you know, pose this as a real choice that focuses on helping the middle class and making sure the wealthy and special interests contribute to, you know, any future solution. And it's a very powerful piece. And I've watched this. You know, it's a bit like climate change. You can put the facts out there, and there's a presumption against it that runs through the media. And, you know, as well as the political class, and I'm sure there's tremendous pressure on the economic side as well. But if you look at the last election, the last debate in the last 3 weeks of the election was about Joe the Plumber. You know, it's not the way I would have framed the debate when the president, you know, spoke about, you know, needing, you know, to move money around, redistribute wealth. And you ended up having McCain raising Joe the Plumber continuously in the debate, bringing Joe the Plumber on the campaign trail, ads running on Joe, and that was an argument that if you raise taxes on the wealthy, it's going to hurt the small business and the middle class. It was a very explicit argument, and Obama's lead in that period went up steadily on who you trust on the economy, went up steadily on who you trust on taxes, and it went up on who you trust on this argument. And so we have a real life test. We know the power of this, but there's tremendous pressure not to use it. And I've watched it in campaigns. I've worked with Paul Begala and others, and I tend to come at my populism in a little bit different way, a little bit more inclusive populism, but we basically operate in a similar framework. And there's tremendous pushback, against it. But I say put the data on the table. I have no doubt that this is the most powerful way to approach the election.
And we know, Stanley Greenberg, that the president has a very disaffected progressive and liberal base. I mean, that seems to be smoldering. What do you think he can do to reinvigorate those people? Because, you know, he did... obviously, the figures are pretty stark. In 2008, I believe 140 million voted, and the Democrats got swept in. They got the trifecta. Mm-hmm. 2 years later, a little more than half voted, 85 million, and the Republicans swept in the House and picked up gains in the Senate.
Well, I mean, look, it's hard to deny that, you know, the data on this and our own, you know, our own survey that we released last week on the 60 Republican battleground seats that mostly Obama had won in 2008, that there was a significant drop in his job approval rating amongst Democrats. So that we know there's an issue, and there are other polls, you know, that have have shown that. But it's also lots of evidence that there's been movement, that the president gets it. That there's lots of evidence that the path he's on right now reflects a consciousness of that. And so it's the piece that I'm less worried about. I mean, I think the president gets it, and and I think there's lots of evidence that he's moving on this.
But isn't there, according to your research, it seems that you're saying that non-college whites are very populist, and older non-college graduate seniors are more populist than any other segment of the electorate. They're also nationalistic and anti-immigrant, mm-hmm. yeah. as well as being anti-war.
Populism is an effective strategy for independence. So the idea that if you battle for the middle class, and battle for those people who struggled, most in this recession, and frankly, who've seen their incomes decline, over the last decade, that battle is that's the central battle for winning independence. Now, there's other seniors are also a significant, piece of this. And they are less educated than, the generations that have come, that are coming on now. And very, very financially, greatly worried, given, what's happening with the economy, what's happening with their own retirement, funds, many, forced back into work. They don't understand China. They don't understand why we're SAPs and don't stem. And so that they are, quite ready to respond to a populism and more nationalist appeal. Don't know whether it's probably not the route that the president takes, but they are, a large portion of the independents, are accessible within this more populist framework. And the idea that this is a turn away from independence just is a misread of who they are.
Right, but doesn't that pose a real problem for the president? He can't be a nationalistic, xenophobic, anti-immigrant, whereas Rick Perry can.
No, that's right. I mean, that's why, to be honest, winning blue-collar voters is going to be tough. I mean, these voters turned away. They hung in with the Republicans and with George Bush post 9/11, and he ran a campaign against Kerry's elitism. That reinforced that, and Bush had a big win with white blue collar, white non-college voters, but they decided in 2006 and 2008 that the Bush economy had nothing in it for them. They reacted strongly against the Republicans and with the economic crisis, the financial crisis. But they are one of the biggest groups to turn away from the president in 2010, as they saw very little recovery for themselves, if anything worse, and that's the toughest battleground. And you're right, a populist Republican candidate like a Perry, could indeed have appeal to those voters. And so while it is true that they may drive away some independents, maybe they'll drive away seniors who are nervous about, his views of Social Security, and they may drive away the more affluent suburban voters, which are very important in the independent space. And so there's, but a Perry, plays there.
Well, just in the last minute or so then, do you think, back to the Stanley Greenberg, back to the disaffected and disillusioned progressives, mm-hmm. There's rumors and some people are floating ideas of running a primary challenge. It's getting a little late in the day for that, but mm-hmm. but nevertheless, the talk is out there. Do mm-hmm. you think it's likely, and given what happened to Jimmy Carter with Teddy Kennedy, will it have a similar damaging effect?
Look, you don't want a primary. And I wrote, and James Carville and I, when we wrote about this, some months ago, when we talked, when we were beginning to hit wrong track numbers that were in the mid-70s, and right direction in the 20s, we began writing, when you have this level of disaffection, stuff is just going to happen that you're just not going to expect. Who knew that in 92 that even, with a Ross Perot, until late in the process, when you have that kind of discontent, stuff happens. And you look at the Buchanan, this is not Teddy Kennedy. I mean, for all, of the weakening, the president, is quite strong with Democrats. He needs to be stronger. But it's, no primary challenger is going to succeed. Or get anything like a Ted, a Ted Kennedy. But, Pat Buchanan made it harder, for, George Bush, the father. So frivolous, primaries, can have an effect. You don't need it. Hopefully that won't happen.
But you do say, Stanley Greenberg, that somebody will run as an independent in 2012.
Well, you could have, there's too much space here. There's too much, when this, process, we'll see, what happens when the Democratic side begins to close down, which is, which effectively is closed down, but there could be mischievous things. The Republican gets, they are very polarized primary. Whether you pick a Romney or, a Perry or whomever else comes into this, there's a real possibility of, disaffection that opens up the space for an independent, candidate in that space.
So if the right wing,
if there were a Ross Perot, out there, it's a little harder. Ross Perot kind of is the best profile of this, but Trump is, Trump doesn't fit it because he's, he looks like he's like part of the financial, world. Making your fame and fortune under firing people is not exactly the best profile for this, this kind of election year. But it looks, a businessman who's not part of this, mess, who wants to, in this case, there is a space for an anti-party, anti-politician candidate who can capture, some of the, populist energy out there.
So just in closing then, if the Republicans do, and the primary voters, of course, are further to the right, if they do choose a Perry, that could open up a space for somebody like a Bloomberg.
Yes.
Well,
he says no, but but who knows?
Right. Well, I thank you for joining us, Stanley Greenberg. It's been an interesting conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Stanley Greenberg, who was a pollster for President Bill Clinton and Vice President Al Gore, British Prime Minister Tony Blair, South African President Nelson Mandela, and a number of other world leaders. He's the co-founder with James Carville of Democracy Corps and the chairman and CEO of Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research. He has an article recently where he's interviewed in the New York Magazine titled "The Elusive Indie." We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with the former vice president of Costa Rica about the health of Hugo Chavez.